All right, well, that is loud this time. We'll bring this meeting to order. Thank you for attending today. And a couple items of business before we get started too far. We first want to excuse Dr. Bruce Bailey and Commissioner Kerry Gibson. They will not be here today and have asked to be excused, and we will do that. But welcome to the rest of you. We have no new members today, so we'll go ahead and move into the agenda. You should have a packet that contains the minutes from June 22nd meeting. Hopefully you've had an opportunity to look at those. If you have, I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes. You're going to put it right in the middle.
It's got to be right to approve.
All right, we have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Motion to approve and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Approved. All right, we'll turn the time over to Deputy Director Kelly Sparks for post-policy update.
Morning, council members. Glad to be with you this morning. Each year as we go through our post-policy, we like to bring those changes that have occurred during the year to the post-council for your information. You should have in your packet a two-page document, two-sided document, that gives an outline of the changes that we'll be reviewing today. And I'll try to do those just briefly, but of course entertain any questions that you might have about any of those policy changes. First one, travel and training, is really just an internal policy affecting only staff members here at POST. The second item under admittance to POST-sponsored basic training programs, just a couple of items that are worthy of note. Bullet item number two there, occasionally we get an application from an individual who has had a felony conviction, but then had that felony conviction either expunged or set aside. Or perhaps the felony conviction has later been reduced to a misdemeanor and then been expunged. Well, state code authorizes us to consider those felony convictions, although they have been expunged and no longer show on the individual's criminal record. State code does authorize us to consider those felony convictions as part of the application process. So this change, or really clarification in the policy, not a change, but just a clarification, indicates there that those felony convictions, even when expunged, will be considered as part of the application review process. As always, we consider the actual behavior of the individual. So in those cases where the behavior would warrant them being rejected, those applications will be rejected. Also, bullet item number three, there's actually an error there that needs to be corrected. The policy was developed in accordance with a change in statute that occurred last year, not this past year, but the previous legislation, and that was in 536203, which eliminated individuals who are restricted from possessing a firearm from being certified as law enforcement officers. So on your sheet there, it shows not eligible for peace officer training. That should really read and will be changed to read, they are not eligible for law enforcement officer training. Then when also in that policy, we have incorporated the changes that the Post Council made to the guidelines approved in your last Post Council meeting, and also the changes to the guidelines for individuals who have misused prescription drugs. And I know we'll be having a conversation again today about that, as it is an agenda item, so I'll forego any discussion about that in lieu of that agenda item. In 2090 assessments, these are really just procedural changes affected by some minor curriculum changes that have taken place. In 2091, this is actually a new policy, which just brings us into compliance with the ADA requirements for written testing. This policy is in effect only for written testing. Also, those satellite academies who conduct programs will follow the ADA guidelines that are established by their institution. Those ADA guidelines just need to comply in form with the policy that we've set forth here. In 2095 study guides, we've had an issue with some cadets posting curriculum information as study material on the public websites. So this is just, again, a clarification that that's prohibited. We want to make sure that the information the cadets get is current. Obviously, when something's posted on the internet, we have no ability to go back and change that as curriculum changes. And so we've made sure or tried to make sure that our cadets are not engaging in that kind of activity. 2210 is really not a new policy, just a minor clarification. 2350, again, is an internal procedural thing that just has to do with how we handle case files based on our some of the new aspects we have with our ACADA system. 2390, most of the changes there have been necessitated by the inclusion of our basic correctional officer physical fitness requirements and of the SFO certification being a prerequisite of basic correctional officer certification. And those also were approved by the council in your last meeting. And then there are two new sections of policy. These are not necessarily new policies, but we have included the procedural requirements on conducting the alternate physical fitness tests. So that those are outlined for anyone who needs to have that information. In 2410, this is an EVO issue. That has been changed to clarify the situation where we have an individual who has been through the SFO, Correctional Academy, and the LEO Academy, but then gets hired as a correctional officer. So it outlines how their certification will be handled. Basically what that means is that if an individual has been through the LEO Academy and then gets hired as a correctional officer, and this applies mostly to sheriff's offices, if they get hired as a correctional officer, they maintain their activity in the profession and they maintain their in-service training, their certification will continue. All of their certifications will continue, including their law enforcement officer certification. But in order for that to happen, they must first have completed all of the training for LEO, which includes emergency vehicle operations. So a lot of satellite academies, they don't get emergency vehicle operations in those academies. They come to us after they're hired. So in the case that a correctional agency wants to maintain their LEO certification, they just need to make sure that they get that EVO training so that the certification can be issued to begin with, and then it will continue as long as they maintain their in-service training. In 3010, we have just added some language to clarify that those policies also apply to certified dispatchers in the state, and also a clarification under bullet point number 2 under that policy that post reports deficient in-service training hours to URS, but we are not a party to what URS decides to do or determines to do with those with that information. So in the event that an officer has a wants to challenge the action that URS takes, that is something that the officer has to take up directly with URS. Post would not be a party to that. Then under 3070, post instructor certification. In the past, we have had some instructor certifications that were on a 2-year recertification cycle and some that were on a 3-year recertification cycle. So including firearms, EVO, defensive tactics, those sort of things. So we have just made those all consistent with a 3-year recertification cycle for all of our specialty instructors. Policy 3100, this deals with the advanced officer certification. In the past, the physical fitness requirement for that certification has been based on the Cooper standards at the 50 percentile, which were age and gender normed. So we have altered that and gone with the requirement that is established by the council for the exit standards for law enforcement officer. So for advanced officer, the physical fitness requirements will be the same as they are for graduation from the LEO Academy. And then on the waiver application, policies 3210 through 3250, a few changes there, just again adding language that clarifies the fact that those policies also apply to certified dispatchers in the state. Are there any questions about any of those policies or updates that I could answer?
Deputy, on 20, I'm sorry, on 2030, the second bullet point there on the clarification of the felony convictions which have been expunged?
Yes, sir.
So on the applications, if their convictions have been expunged on their application, are they required to list that?
They are required.
To list that. And we have that on the application itself, and first day or first week of the academy, we go through that and make sure that every cadet understands that those need to be included on their application.
That was my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll move forward then to the quarterly reports. Lieutenant Al Acosta.
Thank you, Chairman. Ladies, gentlemen, this is the third reporting of this year. Total complaints we received since June 17th, which is right after council, to September 10th, 2015, we've received 29 complaints in our office. We've opened up 20 investigations. We've had zero administrative hearings conducted this quarter. We have closed zero cases with no action, and we've had five voluntary relinquishments. Those voluntary relinquishments consisted of misappropriation of government funds, custodial sexual misconduct, and fraud and theft. Any questions so far regarding that? We have had 327 peace officer applications reviewed. We've had 19 waivers and reactivations. We've had 35 dispatchers for a total of 384, I believe. We also have 75 active investigations and current open cases for a total of 96. So those numbers between 96 and 75, they're in some stage of either closure, writing, individual officers have received notices and they are responding to us, or whatever action they're choosing to take. Any questions? Made it through another council. Thank you.
Lieutenant Brewer, does he have anything to add to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning, council members. So for the third quarter in the Training Bureau, POST has three sessions currently. 314 graduated on August 13th, and there was 26 law enforcement officers that were certified. 315, class 315, which started on July 6th, ended their SFO session on August 11th. They started with 28 cadets, and 26 were certified as special function officers. Two cadets did not pass this final certification exam, and that's after the second try. So those individuals, if they're going to be maintained by their agency, we'll need to retake that block of training. Session 315 started at the LEO block August 12th, and they are slotted to graduate October 22nd. And they have currently 31 cadets in that class. 316 started August 10th, and their SFO will end, September 15th, and they started with 19 cadets. One cadet was dismissed per agency request, so we're down to 18 in that class. And then their LEO block starts September 16th, and they'll be slotted to graduate November 25th. And there's 29 cadets scheduled for that class. Session 317 started their SFO August 31st, and they'll go to October 6th with 21 cadets. And then they're scheduled to graduate the LEO block just right before Christmas. So this is the first year that we have actually had three full classes in the second half of the calendar year, just due to, I think, agencies just need to, they have so many openings. They are sending whoever they can get hired to us to be trained. For the last 2 years, we have combined the two classes that would have been normally in the second half of the calendar year into one, just because we could do that. We pushed one out a little bit, and we brought that second class back and made one big class. This year we were unable to do that. So hopefully we're meeting the demand for law enforcement, for the law enforcement training, and that's our goal. We have been contacted by several agencies and their HR departments saying that if we hire these people, are you going to be able to get them trained? And we've committed to them that we will be able to fulfill the training, even if we have to start another class this fall after one of after either 314 or 315 graduates. We'll do that and we'll train through the holidays. But we understand that it is difficult for agencies to get people right now and to hire those people. So before I move on to basic training, any questions regarding those numbers or any of the classes we have going? All right, let me talk a little bit about in-service training. From July until now, the end of September, POST has offered 35 in-service training classes, training 717 officers and 44 dispatchers for a total of 554 hours of training. Any questions regarding the in-service training? Okay, that's it for my quarterly report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. You want to move on to the Academy satellite?
You bet, I'm ready for that. Okay. So this quarter we performed two satellite Academy audits. First off, just let the POST Council know there are 9 satellite academies now across the state of Utah. And if you include POST, that makes 10 academies that train officers across the state. With the addition of Utah State University Eastern added last fall, that they were the 9th academy. So that means next quarter we're going to be performing 3 satellite academy audits. Usually we can just do 2 a quarter and get them all done, but now we do 2 for 3 quarters, and then the fourth quarter we'll have to audit 3 of those academies. This academy we audited 2, one of them being Utah State University Eastern, and they just started a class. So last year they had their first class, their inaugural class, and they started with 8 cadets, graduated all those 8 individuals. All of them have jobs in the area. This year he started out with 11, and by the time he gets to his law enforcement block of training, he'll have 15 cadets enrolled. So hopefully he can sustain that in that area. When I say he, that is Scott Henry is the director of Utah State University Eastern. And they just moved into a new building there. It's a brand new building, very nice facility. It's pretty modern. I mean, some of the colors in there were very interesting. We went down there and did the audit, but that's a little sidebar note. Any questions regarding the Utah State University Eastern? There were no exceptions to the audit that we found. They're doing a good job there. Okay, I'll move on to the next one, which was the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. We met with their group in August, and they do only special function officer and basic correctional officer training. They do not provide any law enforcement officer training for their agency. So they've been approved to continue that program and doing a good job over there. Mike Schultz is their director. He's his title would be deputy or chief deputy over their training group. And met with them. There was something I did want to bring up. Oh, they did broach the topic of law enforcement officer training, and that's how we kind of got into this. They were approached by the Unified Police Department if they could have the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office do a law enforcement officer training block for them. And I just posed the question, are we not meeting their needs? And they said that's not the issue. They just wanted to have their own in-house academy. And so that may come up as a future discussion topic, but I would just say that we would want to make sure that we met the needs of the Unified Police Department and their training of law enforcement officers before we probably approved another satellite training program. That's just for information. So there was also no exceptions to that audit as well. They're doing a good job over at the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office Training Division. Any questions regarding any of the satellite academies, the audit process, or the training institutions in general across the state? Yes, please, Chief.
Lieutenant Brewer, is there any truth that the numbers are dropping off of those that are applying for and attending academies?
We have seen that trend in the satellites, and that usually goes in conjunction with a good economy. So So the economy's good. People are not enrolling in these satellite academy training programs. Their numbers are dropping. Our numbers are increasing.
Any further questions?
Comment on the satellite academies?
Yes, please.
Yeah, we have nine, and right now we are at the end of our resources to make sure that these academies are in compliance with all the mandates that you guys hand down, and also to make sure quality control is being met. So in the future, if another entity should come before this group and ask for a satellite academy, just bear in mind that's going to be the argument I'm going to make, probably in opposition to that, especially when we're meeting the demand. I don't see a need for an additional satellite.
Is there any statistical data on these satellite academies for maybe example the last 5 years of how many officers have been brought before this council and how many have graduated from there and are still employed actively? Do you have any kind of data on that?
We can pull data on that. So traditionally, satellite academies hire about, and this is just general across the board because each individual satellite academy is different. So for instance, Dixie and Bridgeland only put through one class a year. Weber State, Salt Lake Community College, and Utah Valley University, they put through the lion's share of the of training cadets. You know, they do 3 and 4 classes a year and sometimes more. So we can at any time query in our ICADA system and find out who is hired and who is in the system from those classes. Now, we know traditionally as they graduate about 50% have jobs when they graduate. But then we know there's that window of time before the 18 months hit where they become inactive, and then the 4-year mark where they become lapsed, that still satellite academy cadets are out there getting jobs and they're in the pool and they're out there testing. And so those numbers are kind of nebulous, but we can still keep track of them because they are in the system. So it just depends on when we run the numbers of what statistics come up. So if you look at that 5-year trend, those you would look probably back at 5 years ago, the Satellite Academy cadets that graduated, they could be up in the 80 and 90% of being hired. And so there's still some out there that probably have not got jobs, and we know that there's a portion of them that'll never get jobs, that nobody will ever hire, but they qualified and they graduated, but maybe they're not employable. So, Sheriff, I don't know if that even answered your question at all, but I mean, it's...
How about the first portion of it? The amount, for example, over the last 5 years compared to an officer that's gone through post.
Oh, okay.
What is the amount that comes before this council?
Yeah, I would have no idea on that. We could probably compare.
That's a more difficult report to develop because that's going to require a lot of manual labor. We can decipher where they graduated from if they're still in the system, higher, but then we would have to do some research on the disciplinary side of it. That's going to take some time. But that is a report that if the body wants to see that, we can develop.
What were you thinking, Sheriff?
I've had experience as an administrator on both sides of it. I've hired folks that I've sent through the academy, and I've hired some that's gone through these satellite academies. And I just would like to see the statistical data statewide.
Gotcha. Any other questions?
I believe not. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, we could have a reasonably short meeting today. We'll move on to our next discussion topic. This is the discussion on the use of prescription drug by a applicant or an existing certified officer that was being used by that officer that was not part of a prescription to that officer. As was mentioned earlier, we had discussions last month on this, in June, when we met last, and there were some interesting things that came out of that discussion that I went back and started to look into to compare the sanctions and the matrix that we use when we're looking at violations of this law. And I started to bring up more questions and concerns that I had not had before. So I ask that this be put on the agenda today. But I would like to open up a discussion again along the lines of the totality of what we use this sanction for and the violations of this law. We've had a recent change. Thank you. What you're being passed out now is the current policy as far as what we do within the sanctions for the use of these drugs that are not prescription drugs or a prescription to the officer or deputy. We have had several different changes that in my mind puts to question the validity of the sanction levels that are included in this current policy. We have the JRI, the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, that has come along that has dropped some of those sanctions that used to be for illicit drugs, those Schedule I drugs, those drugs that have no medicinal purpose that we consider street drugs like heroin and others, to a first possession down to an A misdemeanor. In light of that and other things that concern me within this protocol, it seems to me that we are missing the legislative intent of this law. I believe that this law was put forward, and talking to some of the legislators out there, that it was not put forward as a gotcha for an issue of somebody who uses a family member prescription once in a while or has done that in the past when there was no opportunity to get to a doctor over a weekend, or even to see whether or not that actually had any effect on their injury that was similar to a family member's injury. And so I think the legislative intent on this was to basically keep people from obtaining a prescription, a family member prescription or something that they're using from a family member to hide an addiction, which would be one issue, or to basically have the intent to use those drugs either for sale or some other legal or illegal purpose. And so my concern is that we are finding, and I seem to be finding, more and more of these violations of that strict interpretation of the law. Just last week, or excuse me, 2 weeks ago, had a 16 and a half year veteran come and apply for a part-time job from another agency that I won't mention. And that individual, on his application to us, indicated that as early as March of last year, or this year, excuse me, that he had used some of his wife's prescriptions. So it seems that we're bumping up against this quite a bit. I know we have an active case today that we'll get to during our hearings on discipline, where I will excuse myself from the chair for a few minutes. But I thought we would maybe discuss the issues of the sanctions and what might be reasonable or deemed unreasonable based on where we are currently. Some of the sanctions based on if you look at the nine subcategories that are on the back of the first page, that kind of break out some of the, basically, the mitigating or the aggravating circumstances on what the sanctions will be based on any of these nine subparts. It seems to me that we're almost trying to create additional sanctions that have, in my mind, quite a severe. You got 4 years, you got 3 years, all the way down to a warning over something that, in my mind, doesn't seem to be taken very seriously by people. Addiction and drug use is serious, and we do not want officers and deputies on the road who have addictions or who are under the influence of drugs. But I don't believe that was the legislative intent when they put this law into effect that basically said if you have used this drug that's not a specific prescription to you, that it be something that would warrant this kind of a sanction in the world of law enforcement or certifications. To equate that to something else, I don't know how many of you travel. You get those little plastic pill boxes that have Monday through Friday or Saturday, Sunday on them. If you take your prescription pills and you put those in there for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you leave the 90-count bulk container at home, that's against the law. You get on the plane with that, or you travel out of the house with that without the marked prescription bottle, and they're in those little containers for each day, that's against the law. But again, I don't think that was the intent of the legislature to play gotcha with people who are going on vacation and don't want to take six medications of 90 count each. That's the same similar issue that I think that we have here. If there's an issue of addiction, if there's an issue of continued frequent use and abuse, ongoing frequent abuse, I think that would be something to look at where it might warrant sanctions. But as it currently is, I think that there are too many sanctions that are too grievous based on an occasional or a use that is not within what I think is the legislative intent of this law. So I'll open that up to further discussion either way or any comments.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
I think what you just said, Mr. Chair, makes a lot of sense to me. I've been thinking about this very same thing all week since we received a letter from one of our law enforcement agencies. I think that when we have a violation of this in any way, we probably need to recognize it. There are a wide variety of actions we can take, including letters of cautions or warnings or something like that. If it's a one-time or a two-time kind of an incident, I think that we have to have enough common sense to be able to evaluate the nature of that violation. At the same time, I don't think we can just turn our head. I think we have to recognize there's a problem there, but and probably also considering the nature of the drug, what it is, and the numbers of times, and there are a number of conditions and concerns that are expressed here. But I think what you're saying, if I get stopped, I have Monday through Friday, although I don't think I take any really, most of it's vitamins, but nonetheless, to take a bag full of six or eight bottles of 90 pill prescriptions down to St. George for 3 days doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So, I guess in summary, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
If I can provide a history of this document, which was approved by the council last meeting. Before this, internally, we struggled across the board. And it was one day, this was the recommendation. The next day, it was this recommendation. And I was tired of the inconsistency. With that, I would get calls from administrators and people saying, well, it's just one time. And so for my staff to create consistency, I needed something that was solid in writing that I could point to an individual and say, you know, I just took it so I could concentrate on a test. But I took it one time. And you know, the one thing that we did consider as we drafted this was the knowledge of the individuals, citizen versus law enforcement, who goes through a curriculum and understands what is illegal and what is not, and what laws they are enforcing on the street should they come across prescription drugs that are in possession of somebody who does not have a prescription for them. What is the charge? So, you know, I just want to be consistent. It has been a very frustrating topic for me and my staff. I understand the concerns. I just want to know how you guys want me to handle this situation, but understand, you know, we hold officers to a higher standard than we do citizens. And I will just leave it there.
Thank you, Director. I also, what's that? Colonel Fuhrer, sorry.
I agree with you. I think it's a well-written document that we agreed upon last time. And I think it leaves the leeway for council to look at those single-use incidents. Person's playing basketball, they sprain the ankle. It's not going to be the next day until they go in there and they take something to relieve the pain. I think that is all included in this, but it gives us the discretion and the freedom to kind of look through this. Another thing I think we need to also advertise is this to the police officers and the deputies and the troopers out there, because I think we're seeing some violations of this where they probably don't know the serious ramifications of doing what they're doing. Now, there's a difference between taking somebody's Lortab, you know, 30 pills within 3 or 4 days, and there's a difference between somebody twisting their ankle and using their wife's prescription medication until they get to the doctors the next day. But I think if they understood the ramifications, they could use better judgment in their use of this and maybe more timely visits to their medical practitioner the next day or the following day to make sure that what they're doing in their private life kind of mimics what the council is looking at when we impose discipline.
I would tend to agree with that. I think part of the issue is probably education on the part of the officers. But at some point, some of these officers, before they became officers, have engaged in this conduct. And even some afterwards, I think, don't understand. I'm not sure how much emphasis we put on that in actual training during post-certification classes, the seriousness of that. And I believe that it has been underestimated as a seriousness by many of the applicants where this has occurred even after they have been certified or many years after they were certified. And again, I'm not saying that it's right to ignore this. I don't think that should be the case. We should hold ourselves in law enforcement to a higher standard. I think, though, until and unless something comes up where an individual has an issue that's brought forward or they disclose something that they don't understand the seriousness of it, that they at least be given a chance before a major sanction to have something lesser of a sanction that would be maybe not quite consistent with what we have here. That's my thought. Again, I don't think you can solve this today as far as if we do decide to even consider it again. But it'd be my request to the council to look at maybe considering this with a subgroup of post-council here to really look at what these qualifiers are, what the exclusionary parts are, what the mitigating and aggravating circumstances are, because they are extensive. To me, some of this goes back to the point where if you're taking like a DUI charge, did the DUI charge come because you left a party mad and drunk, a family fight or drunk? I mean, there's so many subcategories of this that it almost seems that they're too excessive, that there should be fewer categories and that they should more focus on what I believe is the legislative intent of this law and not the occasional or the occasional or the exception to a use that is not part of what I would consider an addiction or an effort to basically subvert having a prescription in your own name.
Chairman,
just an
observation.
Uh-huh.
Looking at the chart, I mean, that works well for, waiting periods to enter the academy. I did notice, though, would there need to be possibly changes to the disciplinary guidelines for officers already certified, especially since right now it's still a Marine right, still a Category C, which is still has a baseline of 2-year suspension, even if it's like I took one pill one time after I injured myself. So you may need to make some adjustments to the guidelines.
That's exactly what I would propose, that we look at that in basically what the policy states as far as its language and then where it applies to the guidelines. That would be my request that we do create some kind of a subcommittee to look at that, because I know it seems to be an ongoing problem. I didn't think it was as big a problem until it seems like lately we have, maybe you're not looking for something and now you are and you see it, but we've had continued incidences where we've heard of it, people who have had this issue, whether they're applying for post or whether in some cases they're trying to continue their certifications from, say, SFO to LEO and end up with that situation where they've admitted that they've had this go on even after their first certification was completed. I'll open it up to whether, oh, yes.
Just a quick comment for me, I'll volunteer to be on that subcommittee if we decide to do that, but I want you to know that I'm on the far side of that. I think we've already done that with this policy change, so I'm concerned about us getting too lenient. I totally get it. I understand that we have those situations, and I don't want to lose good people, but I also think we need to be very careful about how far we do go, how many chances we give, because sometimes people, oh, I got 3 chances? Well, I'll continue to do it 3 times, and all I'm really voicing is that I'm more on the opposite side. I want us to be careful that we don't become too lenient, and I'd be glad to be on that committee if you put one together.
Thank you. I guess I'll put that out to the group as far as if there's some thought that we should restudy this or not. Really should come back to the council here for some direction. Yes, sir.
Intent, and like the gentleman stated, you know, being on the far side, I'd rather know about the violation than foster an environment where they're going to try and omit and hide that. I'd rather have it out front, address the problem, get them help if they need help, if that's the case, or just education that you can't do that when you sprained your ankle. But I think that looking at the guidelines for the disciplinary actions needs to be addressed. Okay. And depending on the day of the subgroup, I'd be willing to participate in that as well.
Any further discussion? I'll entertain a motion if there is one to either do or not do a group.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to bring forth a group of individuals from this council to take a look at this more closely and define what this document says and define what the procedures will be going forward and recommendations to the council will be on violations of misuse of prescription drugs.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second that.
We have a second. Any further discussion on the motion before vote? All those in favor of the motion to create a subcommittee, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, having said that, should we just take volunteers? All right, any of those who would like to volunteer for that subcommittee, would you please make it known? Okay. Keep your hands up while Sean is writing. Yes, sir.
The advice that number one death that we're running into lately is prescription drug overdoses in people's residences from every walk of life. They're using prescription drugs that don't understand the effects they have on them.
Agreed. We see that in our county too.
Yeah.
And they, for whatever reason, they fly under the radar. You don't seem to see much in the media or public awareness of that. Again, ours are mostly illicit drugs into the heroines that come out of the prescription abuse, though, or an addiction based on an injury, but it is an interesting link. And again, yeah, I was in no way believing that we should not address this for the seriousness of the issue that it is. I think there are some issues as far as how we look at this within the sanctions that may be addressed. So, thank you. Yes, sir.
We need to say the names.
Okay.
The deputy director and I will also be on the committee on.
Great.
Can I just read out the names? Make sure we have everybody.
Yes.
Director Cook, Dr. Checkitz, John Crowley, Mayor Molesky. Did I say that?
Molesky.
Thank you. Sorry. Colonel Fuhrer and Officer Moran. Right. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Sheriff Tracy.
Any further discussion on that topic before we move forward? All right, thank you. All right, we'll move forward with the agenda. Coming to our disciplinary cases. We'll turn the time over to Mr. Yockey.
Good morning, Council. The first matter we have before the Council is the certification of Joseph C. Coate. He is a current member of the Sevier County Sheriff's Office. Sustained allegations is willfully falsifying information to obtain certification, which falls under Category C of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is 2-year suspension. After I read these facts, we did get a late letter from Sevier County Sheriff that I would like you guys to read over just before we have the opportunity to discuss this matter. But let me read a summary of the facts. On February 25th, 2011, Joseph Coate completed a post application to attend a post-sponsored special function officer academy in Richfield, Utah. Coate did not disclose any illegal drug use on his application. Coate completed the SFO academy and worked as a part-time reserve officer for the Sevier County Sheriff's Office. And then in 2013, Coate was hired as a part-time jail deputy. On December 3rd, 2014, Coate completed a post-application to attend a basic correctional officer academy. Coate again did not disclose any illegal drug use on his post-application. Coate completed the BCO Academy on March 16, 2015. After completing the academy, Coate applied for a full-time correctional officer position with the Sevier County Sheriff's Office. As part of the hiring process, Coate submitted a voice stress analysis. During the analysis, Coate disclosed that he had used drugs in 1994. On May 14, 2015, Coate contacted Post and informed them that he did not disclose his illegal drug use on his Post application. On June 25, 2015, during a Post-Garrity interview, Coate admitted to intentionally omitting his drug use so his 2014 Post application would match his 2011 Post application. On September 1, 2015, Joseph Coate waived his rights to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of, agency action. And again, if you'll just please quickly glance through the letter provided by the sheriff.
Hopefully everybody's had an opportunity to read that letter. Is Mr. Coate here or a representative for him? Would you like to address the council?
Good morning, council members. I truly regret being here in front of you today. I just want to tell you, first off, I'm not a liar. I did make the mistake of not putting that on both applications. On the first application, I did read it as, in the last 5 years, have you done drugs? I did not read the question that said, have you ever? I just read the question and answered it, have you in the last 5 years? As on the second application in 2014, I had pulled up my first application to make them match. So, and where I put it on the first one, I just put it on the second one. Again, on the second one, I just put that I hadn't, because I put that on the first one, knowing that in 94 that I had done some illegal drugs back when I was a teenager. Again, I'm not a liar. I've been a good reserve deputy for Sevier County. I've been honest. I've told them everything. And I apologize for writing that mistake. And I did. When it occurred to me what had happened, I did call Lieutenant Alacosta, and turn myself in so we can get this handled, and kept getting a hold of Post so we can get this handled quickly, because I didn't want this to drag on. I wanted to move forward in my career. The last day, I went back and looked that I have worked for a deputy for Sevier County as a correctional. Was April 22nd. I worked at graveyard, so on the last was April 23rd at 0600 hours in the morning was the last time I had worked as in the office capacity. And that was shortly after we had discovered that mistake. I do not know what my sheriff wrote in that letter. But I hope you all take what I'm saying into consideration and what he's saying into consideration. One question that the sheriff and I had talked about, because he is unsure on and I'm unsure on, is if I do get the 2-year full suspension, will I be able to do my 40 hours of training every year so when that 2 years is up, I can just go back to work?
No.
Okay.
The time frame still runs.
Because you're technically out of the profession, so 18 months would be up and you go into an inactive status, and therefore you're required to come through a waiver process.
So I'll be at the waiver process and I'll be able to take the test?
The written test and the physical fitness.
Okay.
All right, are there any questions for Mr. Cope from the council? All right, seeing none. Thank you. Do you want to sum?
Just as a quick note, if he had disclosed it, it wouldn't have prevented him from being in the academy, but that's just a quick note.
Thank you. All right, we'll bring this back to the council. There's a post recommendation for 2-year suspension. Any discussion?
Question, yes, sir. On the sheriff's letter. It said that indicating a candidate would, in the fourth paragraph, indicating a candidate that would not be eligible if drug use was within the last 2 previous years. Is that on the application? Or something to that effect? It is? Okay.
The application's pretty clear.
Okay.
Any further questions? Aye, Sheriff.
I think I would just say, my view would be that, there are some mitigating circumstances. There's a self-report. Maybe there was a mistake. Maybe you just were afraid to put down that use. I mean, 1994 is a long time ago. I was, you're talking about a teenager. I think we should consider something less. It looks like that the range is 9 months. I think we should consider something less than 2 years based on this. We're talking about substance use. We're talking about forming a subcommittee and trying to interject a certain amount of context to when we make these decisions. And for example, the context of somebody being on a hike in St. George and twisted an ankle terrible and taking an opiate-based medication from their wife because of a terrible pain they can't get into the doctor is a lot different than taking somebody's Ritalin so that you can, pass a test because you're zipped up on speed. And I think that there's a difference here. If somebody's an honest or dishonest, I think that we don't know. I think there's a reason to provide a certain amount of discipline here, but I also think that 2 years is just too much. I think I would propose that look at reducing to 9-month suspension.
All right.
I'd second that, Mr. Chairman.
All right, we have a motion to reduce this to a 9-month suspension. We also have a second. Any further discussion? Second? Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor of amending the 2-year suspension recommendation to a 9-month, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm opposed.
One opposed. Okay. I see that the ayes have it. We'll deem that that has passed. Thank you, Mr. Coleman. All right, next case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Jennifer Fitzgerald. Is a former member of the Utah Department of Corrections. She is a former member of the Utah Department of Corrections. Sustained allegation is retail theft, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 1-year suspension. And a summary of the facts are as follows. On November 6, 2014, Jennifer Fitzgerald went to a local police department, local department store. Fitzgerald placed several items in her shopping cart and then left the store without paying for the items. Police were contacted, and Fitzgerald was later located at her home. Fitzgerald told the police she had paid for the items but could not locate a receipt. Police issued Fitzgerald a citation for retail theft. During Garrity interviews with both her agency and Post, Fitzgerald admitted to taking the items without paying, but stated it was unintentional. Fitzgerald was terminated by her agency and later entered a guilty plea to be held in abeyance to the charge of retail theft, a Class B misdemeanor. On August 14, 2015, Fitzgerald waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right, thank you. Is Ms. Fitzgerald or a representative for her here? I see no representative or Ms. Fitzgerald in the room. Bring this back to the council for a motion. Director Cook recusing himself.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move we accept the 1-year suspension as recommended.
Okay, we have a 1-year recommendation as recommended in the post document. Is there a second?
Second.
Who is that second? All right. We have a second. Any further discussion? Sheriff?
I have a concern. It doesn't say which store it was, but generally, you know, as you walk through a store, you pay for your items, they're put in a sack. She would know when she got to a car that these things aren't in a sack. I just think that there might not have been some full truth on any part there. I don't know if a year is because you got the theft and then you got, in my mind, untruths from her to the investigating agency.
Okay, are we looking at the recommended substitution motion? Okay, I see no substitution. Then we'll move forward on the original motion. The motion is then to vote for the 1-year suspension as recommended in the post document. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, vote is unanimous to approve. All right, next case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Jason Gardner. He is a current member of the Salt Lake City Police Department. Stated allegation is use or possession of controlled substance, Schedule 4, without a prescription. This falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 3-month suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. In September 2012, Jason Gardner was working the graveyard shift for Ogden PD and having a hard time regulating his sleep schedule. During this time, Gardner was provided half an Ambien by a coworker to help him with his sleeping difficulties. After finding the Ambien effective, Gardner contacted his doctor and obtained his own prescription for Ambien. On February 3, 2015, Gardner disclosed his one-time use of his co-worker's prescription Ambien during a pre-employment screening for another police agency. After speaking with Post, the hiring agency agreed to employ Gardner but instructed him to contact Post to report his prescription drug use. During a post-Garrity interview, Gardner admitted to taking the Ambien and admitted to knowing it was wrong. On August 27, 2015, Gardner waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action. For the council's note, there is a letter from Interim Police Chief Mike Brown. If you haven't had a chance, I would request that you have a chance to glance at that.
Okay, we'll take a moment to review that letter. It was sent out earlier by email, but just in case you have not seen it, we'll take just a second to look at that. Thank you. All right, is Mr. Gardner here? Would you like to address the council?
Good morning, council. First of all, I apologize for having to be in front of you today. I've tried to live my life so that this doesn't happen. A few things that I'd like to say, and keep in mind that I prepared something to say not knowing that there would be a discussion and not knowing what would be said. A lot of the things that I'm going to say are similar to what you have discussed today, but keep in mind that this is from me and not from the discussion. First of all, I did take a half an Ambien 3 years ago. I did know that you're not supposed to take someone else's prescription. Okay? I knew this before I was a police officer. However, the only way I can explain it is inexperience and not understanding the severity of my actions. Basically, just from my own words, I want you to understand my thought process at the time. I was a brand new officer working graveyards. I was having trouble sleeping. A lot of you have worked graveyard shifts, so the things I'm going to say are no excuse, but just so you understand what I was thinking. I had a half an Ambien. I took it when I went to sleep. My intent was, ironically, to test the prescription before I got a prescription in my home that I didn't understand. I know that might sound kind of foolish, seeing the circumstances, but that was my intent. My intent was not to abuse the drug or feel any sort of high. After I found that the Ambien was effective, I got my own prescription. Again, it might sound foolish on my part, but I did not understand the severity, and I did not think too much about that afterwards. 3 years later, I applied for Salt Lake, and I like to think that I'm always trying to be honest. I went to a voice stress analysis test, and when the question was asked about drugs, I'm going to take a step back. As I prepared for that voice stress analysis test, I thought of everything I'd ever done bad in my life. And I thought, oh, I've taken this prescription that was not prescribed to me. When asked about drugs, I disclosed that. I did not know that I'd end up in front of post-counsel, but I do not regret being honest. I was advised to notify my current agency, which was Ogden, and I advised them. At the time, I was in fear that they would fire me and I wouldn't get hired by Salt Lake, but me and my wife were totally prepared for that to happen. Salt Lake, very gratefully, still hired me. And I went through their lateral academy and have been working since. One thing that, in my behalf, that I'd like to express is the guilt that I've felt since January when I disclosed it. In this 8 or 9 months, I've had major anxiety. I have not told a soul about this within my academy class, any of my coworkers, and I do not look forward to anybody knowing the reputation that I am giving to police officers by committing the violation. So again, I apologize. At the time, I did understand it was wrong, but did not understand the severity, and I am totally prepared for whatever suspension might come my way.
Mark, thank you. You want some?
Nothing under rebuttal.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Mr. How do you say your last name? Gardner?
Gardner.
Gardner, okay. Yeah.
Suspension at all? Go ahead. Mr. Gardner, have you had any suspension today?
No, sir, I've had no disciplinary action in my 4 years.
Anything related to this, sir?
No, absolutely not.
Any other questions? All right. There is a recommendation for 3 months suspension. The chair will entertain a motion.
I'd like to make a recommendation. I read the letter. I think it was honest. I think he was honest, and I think we're way over the top with the suspension. I think that it should be a letter of caution.
Is that a motion?
Yes, it is.
Okay, we have a motion for a letter of caution. Do we have a second?
I would second that.
All right. Chief Carpenter, second. Further discussion on the motion?
I would agree with Sheriff Noel. I think that's the appropriate action in this case.
Any further discussion? All right, we have recommended 3 month suspension, but the motion is to issue a letter of caution. Is that correct? And a second? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you. All right, next case.
The next matter before the council is a certification of Lloyd Ed Machado. He is a retired member from the Utah Highway Patrol. The sustained allegation is disorderly conduct, which falls under Category F of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a letter of caution. A summary of the facts are as follows. On June 7, 2013, Lloyd Machado followed a car with four juveniles into a parking lot in front of them because one of them had flipped off Machado's wife. Machado eventually made physical contact with one of the occupants by grabbing the juvenile's arm and flipping the hand upwards. The juvenile called the police to report the incident. Machado waited for a period of time, but then left the scene before police arrived. Following the complaint from the juvenile, a charge was filed in the local justice court for assault, which was amended down to disorderly conduct. The case was eventually dismissed, and Machado received a letter of counsel from his agency. On August 26, 2015, Lloyd Machado waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right. Is Mr. Machado a representative here?
Please. Sir, so as I read this, Machado was being driven by his wife.
Correct. So he was in the passenger side.
It didn't really say in here, so he directed her to follow?
Correct.
Okay.
So did he physically grab the young man, is that correct?
So he grabbed the individual and flipped his hand up and stated some information in regards to the individual's finger. In specific, let me see that finger, because and so he did not. We don't have any other documentation whether any physical pain or harm or anything was done. It would just grab the individual's hand and flipped it up.
How long has the trooper been employed with the Highway Patrol, or what's his service?
He is currently retired from the Utah Highway Patrol. He retired, I believe, in January.
All right. Any other questions? Now we'll bring it back to the council for a motion. We have a recommendation from Post of the letter of caution. And we have a motion to have a letter of caution, a second by Sheriff Decker. Any further discussion? All right, call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Who's the deemed that does pass, it would be a letter of caution. Before this next case is read, at this time, this is an officer that's from, a deputy from my sheriff's office, so I will right now take the motion to, or the opportunity to relinquish the chair for a minute to our vice chairman, Chief Carpenter, and I'll step out for a second.
Sheriff was a little low there. Next case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Bodie Nelson. He is a current member of the Utah County Sheriff's Office. Sustained allegations is unlawful use or possession of a controlled substance and lying on a post application. This falls under Category A of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 3-year suspension. And a summary of the facts are as follows. Sometime between January and March of 2014, Brody Nelson, a special functions officer with the Utah State Hospital, became sick and used 3 doses of his wife's leftover prescription cough medicine. Cough medicine was a Schedule II controlled substance. On March 23, 2015, Post reviewed Nelson's application for a correctional officer training and became aware of Nelson's unlawful use of the prescription drug, which he disclosed in his application. Nelson also disclosed he took 2 doses of his father's prescribed lidocaine patches before he started the SFO Academy in 2012, and 2 doses of his mother's prescribed testosterone gel while he was attending the LEO Academy in 2013. Nelson did not disclose the lidocaine use on his post application in 2012 and did not notify post of the testosterone use while he was attending the academy. On March 24th, 2015, during a Garrity interview with Post, Nielsen admitted using his father's lidocaine patches and omitting the information on his 2012 application. He also admitted using his mother's testosterone gel while he was attending the academy and admitted that he did not notify Post. Nielsen also admitted to using his wife's prescription cough medicine. Nielsen said he was aware that he could not use another person's prescription, but did not really think it was that big of a deal, and he wanted to save a trip to the doctor. On August 24th, 2015, Bodie Nielsen waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Is Mr. Nielsen here or a representative of Mr. Nielsen? Please.
Morning, Council. I just wanted to start off by letting everybody know that I did not intentionally lie about my father's lidocaine patches. And then when I started on my BCO, that's when I remembered that. That's why I disclosed it on the BCO. I haven't taken any more of the lidocaine patches. And my mother's testosterone gel, I used it twice. Realized that I should probably go to the doctor to seek medical attention for some infertility issues. I have since had a surgery to correct that. As far as my wife's cough medicine, I do realize now that it is that big of a deal. It won't happen again. I'm fully prepared to accept any consequences the post recommends.
Any questions for Mr. Nielsen? Please, Sheriff Tracy.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to defer to counsel for post-counsel.
Right. As agency head.
Sheriff Tracy.
Yes, sir.
Apparently, according to the code, the only person that can speak other than through a letter to post counsel is the individual or their assigned counsel.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
We could also table this matter and allow you to submit a letter and hear this in the next council.
My only question was that about 5 or 6 years ago, I did make an appearance for in a similar issue for a deputy. I guess, has that changed since that time? Okay, I was not aware of that. I'll let that stand then. I was prepared to make a statement, but I can submit a letter. Either way, you'd like to do that.
Thanks, Sheriff Tracy. I have a motion from Colonel Fuhrer to accept the motion for a table and
second over here.
John
Crowley gave a second.
So we're all clear. You're either a motion to table the case to hear at the next.
So the sheriff comes and write a letter.
Okay. Any further discussion?
We motion just, to, all right, to table.
We just need a vote.
Oh, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'll assume the chair again. Sorry for that, counsel. About 5 years ago, I appeared on a motion or on an issue and was able to make a statement. I was not understanding that had changed. So I ask your forgiveness for that. All right, we'll move to the next case then.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Trevor Pearson. He is a former member of the Utah Highway Patrol. Sustained allegation is a BCI violation, which falls under Category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a six-month suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On December 30th, 2013, Trevor Pearson accessed vehicle registration information through the Utah Bureau of Criminal Identification's Criminal Justice Database while he was off duty. UHP initiated an internal investigation and local police agency conducted a criminal investigation. Pearson resigned from the UHP on June 22nd, 2014. Charges were screened with a local prosecutor but later declined. Post conducted a Garrity interview with Pearson. Pearson admitted he accessed BCI records to check a vehicle registration at the request of a friend and that it was not for a legitimate law enforcement purpose. On August 24th, 2015, Trevor Pearson waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Mr. Pearson, our representative here? I see no one rising. Bring this matter back to the council for a vote. We have a recommendation of a six-month suspension.
Can I ask you a question of the attorney?
Yes, please.
What was the reasoning for checking that for a friend? Was it, do you mean to check ownership or expiration, or what was the reasoning?
It was to validate the ownership of a vehicle.
For purchase or sale?
No.
No.
Okay. Any further questions? Yes.
Historically, at least according to my memory, I feel like most of our BCI violations have been letters of caution. What raises this to the 6 month?
If I can speak to that. So in the past, we've done some with letter of caution. The ones in the past recently were due to the fact of what records they were searching and to the intent of what records they were searching. The letter of caution, for instance, in I believe two post councils ago, two or three, it was the officer looked up his own undercover ID and two or three other officers looked up that same undercover ID. So not necessarily looking up another person's record, but still violating the statute. In this matter, we actually have the difference of this individual looking up someone else's record.
Any further questions?
There's no other reason why he resigned. It shows he resigned pending an IA. That to me is very, he resigned because of that?
Yeah, I don't know that we can address
that. I can't address that, unfortunately.
Other than the issue that's at hand. That much I did know.
So I'm recusing some of this conversation.
All right, I'll bring it back to the council for either discussion or further discussion or a vote. Do I need a motion, excuse me?
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
To change it from 6 months to 3 months. Just to be a little bit more consistent.
All right. So we have a motion to take the 6 months recommended suspension and alter that to a 3 month. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Chief Stratton. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor of a 3 month suspension, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. You think that passes? Thank you. Next case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Austin Shepherd. He was unemployed at the time, a cadet, just recently graduated. Sustained allegation is falsifying a post application, which falls under Category C of the post disciplinary guidelines. Post recommended disciplinary action is a 2 year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On July 25th, 2014, Austin Shepherd furnished alcohol to his 18-year-old girlfriend at his residence. On July 28th, 2014, Shepherd started attending a satellite police academy. On July 29th, 2014, Shepherd submitted a verification of information form with an addendum to his post application, and there was no disclosure of the furnishing of alcohol to a minor. Sometime in August 2014, Shepherd again furnished alcohol to his underage girlfriend at his residence. There was no disclosure of the incident to post. In October of 2014, a local police agency was conducting a pre-employment background investigation on Shepherd and discovered the furnishing of alcohol and post-application issues. Post was notified and a Garrity interview was conducted with Shepherd. During the interview, Shepherd admitted to furnishing alcohol to his 18-year-old girlfriend on two separate occasions and also failing to disclose this information to Post. On August 24th, 2015, Austin Shepherd waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Is Mr. Shepherd a representative here?
Yes, sir.
Would you like to address the Post?
Good morning, Council. I have prepared a statement for today. So I'd like to start by making it clear that I am not disputing the accusations I'm faced with today. I did make those mistakes, and I own them. I would, however, like to explain a little bit about them. I've always wanted to be a police officer. My dad has always told me that. While no parent wants his child to be a police officer, especially given the way people seem to feel about officers lately, he has always known what I was supposed to do, and I am right with him. In July of 2014, I had my girlfriend and other friends at my house for our 21st birthday. I went to the store and purchased alcohol, and during the night, she did consume the alcohol with me. At the time of the incident, I regretfully did not realize that I was committing a crime by having her drink too. I did know that it was not legal for her to be drinking because she was only 18, but I was not aware that I was breaking the law as well. During the police academy at Weber State University, I was informed of the addendum process. I did submit an addendum for an unrelated incident, so I was aware of that process. The thought of the alcohol incident did not cross my mind because I was not yet under the impression that I had committed a crime. During the alcohol law class, I learned the crimes associated with alcohol, but it did not click in my head that I myself had committed those crimes. If at that time, if it did click, I would have submitted that as quickly as possible and would not have disclosed that. When questioned about the incident by Syracuse Police Department, I was shocked as I realized that I did in fact commit a crime. I did not try to hide anything from them. I openly explained the event, and from there it went off to Post Counsel. I would not try to justify myself and my actions with the goal of claiming innocence. I accepted what I was told by Sergeant McFarland in my initial Post interview, and I fully expressed the details of the incident with him and his partner. That was just kind of the incident there. We'll go into my Post experience here, which is the main reason I would like to talk on my behalf today. When I first met with Sergeant McFarland and his partner, I was questioned about the incident, and I cooperated without hesitation. I explained to him that I did not intentionally conceal this information, and I was not aware I was committing a crime at the time of the incident. After our discussion, I was informed by Sergeant McFarland that he would complete an investigation and that a one-year suspension would likely be his recommendation to the Post Council. Due to the fact that there were no aggravating factors, I was led to believe that I should plan on that being a one-year suspension from the time the case was submitted to Post in November of 2014. I was told that I should plan on receiving a packet in the mail within the next 2 weeks and that he would call me before he sent it. Shortly after the time of my hearing, I was asked to return to my previous employer, which I had enjoyed and which paid me very well. After consideration towards my future goals as a police officer, I declined that request and took a lower paying job as a security patrol officer. I took this job with the intent of using my one-year suspension as a learning opportunity to expand on my experience in the community service and law enforcement fields. Throughout my time as a security officer, I planned the following year's finances and was aware that I would be getting into debt because of the pay decrease. Unfortunately, my company began bouncing payroll checks, which caused my already tight financial situation to become a serious challenge. But I stayed at this job because I was under the impression that it was only for 1 year as I waited out my suspension and the experience I was getting would be valuable. Months had passed since I heard from Sergeant McFarland, and I was anxious to continue with the process and had the suspension behind me. I called Sergeant McFarland and was informed that his caseload was high and they haven't started the investigation. He told me that nothing has changed and that I should expect my packet within the next couple weeks. I called Sergeant McFarland again and again after weeks turned into months, yet I still had not received a packet in the mail. Each time I called, I was given the same information and was told that nothing has changed and that I should be waiting a couple more weeks for my packet. After my last call to Sergeant McFarland, I began to be concerned and frustrated. I called my father and asked for assistance and advice on what to do next. He placed a call and the call was returned by Sergeant Al Acosta. Lieutenant Acosta informed my father that there was nothing he could discuss with him and that I could personally give him a call. He gave me his number and I called Lieutenant Acosta as quickly as I could and explained to him my concerns and questions. I explained that I was anxious to make sure my case was heard in the September council meeting after being told by Sergeant McFarland that my suspension would end in November of 2015. Lieutenant Acosta quickly informed me that my suspension was not expected to be 1 year, but a 2 year suspension. Lieutenant Acosta informed me that the alcohol incident had happened before I was certified, so I could not be suspended for that. But instead, I would be suspended for falsifying information and lying on a post-application. I thanked Lieutenant Acosta and ended the call with him. Sergeant McFarland called me as I was ending the call with Lieutenant Acosta. I spoke to Sergeant McFarland and was informed that his recommendation had been changed to a 2 year suspension. He told me that 1 year suspension was based off the alcohol incident and that he was under the impression that providing alcohol to a minor was a Class C misdemeanor. He told me that I was getting the good end of the deal because I was actually being disciplined for the alcohol incident, or if I was actually being disciplined for the alcohol incident, it would have been a 3 year suspension, being that it is a Class A misdemeanor. He apologized for giving me the wrong information and that a 2 year suspension was going to be recommended and that I should be expecting my packet soon. To be candid, at this point, I'm just frustrated. I have gotten into debt and stayed employed by a company that provided great experience towards my career goal, but offered no benefits and often could not even pay me on time. I can no longer return to my previous employer that I was previously offered before this started, and I'm faced with finding employment elsewhere. I counted on my suspension being 1 year, and I am stuck with this company because I felt, it would benefit any resume while applying at various police departments. And yet it feels as though when it was determined I could not be suspended for the alcohol issue, a different charge was chosen for which I could be suspended. Again, I do not dispute the charges. I have always owned up to my mistakes. I just feel it is unfair to have led me to believe one thing and then switch things for me at the last moment and not letting me know until it was months to come where my investigation would have been over, or my suspension would have been over. If I had been told from the beginning that a 2 year suspension would be recommended, I would not have taken this position, and I would have been in a happier and more financially stable position with my previous employer, the same employer that I only left so that I could attend the academy and pursue my dreams as a police officer. That being said, I'm not asking that my issue be dismissed, nor that a suspension not be imposed. I would like to ask that my suspension be shortened from the recommendation of 2 years. I can continue the job I am currently in, and with the continued help of my family, ensure my current financial situation not be worsened until the end of the year. But it is my hope that the council will allow the original suspension of what I was told of 1 year to remain, that I will be allowed to apply for certified positions as of November of 2015. Thank you for your consideration. Appreciate it.
Are there any questions from council? Would you like some?
Chairman, just as a quick clarification, in regards to post investigations, our officers do their best to determine what the offense may be, but until completing the investigation, our officers are unable to ascertain to fully know what the charge will be. We have to go through a screening process and determine what charge which charge meets the elements of the offense. In regards to the statements about the 1 year, Sergeant McFarland did say 1 year, but he said at least 1 year. You're looking at least 1 year. And in regards to the November, there was no claim that the suspension would end November 2015. So that's just a clarification we're bringing forward.
Thank you. Any questions?
Chairman, I have a question.
For
the director.
Okay.
On suspensions, they start from the time of the post-council meeting, is that correct?
Usually from the time of incident occurred. But if it's, say, an officer is hired and then separates employment, then we go from the date of separation. But where this individual was not hired, it'd be from the date of incident.
From the date of incident. And the difference between, or the reason it's not a Category D versus a Category C, is because of the willfully falsifies. Is that the?
That is correct. Yes, because it is willful falsification, it goes under Category C.
Any further questions for either Mr. Shepherd or for counsel? All right. We have a recommendation of a 2.5 year suspension from post. I'll entertain a motion.
Just to clarify, it's a 2 year suspension where a post is recommended.
That one, sorry. Yep, 2 year. I think I'm doing.
I move we approve the two-year suspension as recommended by Post.
Do we have a motion for the two-year? Is there a second?
Second.
Can we have a second? Is there further discussion?
Can I say something? I don't typically do this, but this case did take an unusually long time, and I own that. And I apologize to Mr. Shepherd for that. That is not how we conduct business. We've been down an investigator. This is no excuse, and we've had quite a caseload this year. But needless to say, this type of case should not have taken this long.
I rescind my recommendation then.
Okay, looking for a recommendation or a motion.
Can we get a matter of clarification on the date? So the time frame that you've been out of employment to date?
Mr. Shepherd?
Oh, yes. I was never employed.
I finished the academy in January. I started my job as a patrol officer in security. I was never employed as a law enforcement officer with those certifications, so the last time those certifications were active was that graduation date. Is that your question?
Which was your
question? When was your graduation date?
December, middle of December.
I'm 14.
14?
Yes. I'm 14.
Sure, yes,
14. I'm not sure on the exact date in December, though.
And when were you notified by Post that there was action against your certification?
Very shortly after, during the investigation, it was in November.
Of 14, is that correct?
Yes, November. So it was before graduation.
Mr. Chairman, so whatever
the duration of a suspension, but let's say here, here's an example. What effect does that have? When does that, it starts today for what?
If we go to the original, which is July 14th, and then
it would be July 29th.
But then there was a separate incident in August, which we do not know the exact date. Correct, Mr. Shepherd?
Correct.
So if it were August, then either date, we would, the time would be certain.
Carol Fear.
Make a motion to accept 1 year, take it from 2 years to 1 year suspension.
All right, we have a motion for 1 year. Is there a second?
Second.
Several seconds. Did she get one of them? Okay. All right, we have a second. We have 1 year and a second on the motion. Any further discussion? Call for a vote. All those in favor of the 1 year suspension say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And we have one opposed.
Thank you.
Did you get that one opposing vote? Okay. All right, thank you. Case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Michael Smith. He is a former member of the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. Sustained allegation is two DUIs in an open container, which falls under category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 2.5-year suspension based on the two DUIs. A summary of the facts are as follows. On December 25th, 2012, Michael Smith was stopped by a local law enforcement agency for a red light violation and speeding. During the stop, the officer noticed that Smith was showing signs of being intoxicated. The officer and his supervisor notified three supervisors from Smith's agency, who responded and took Smith and his vehicle to a hotel for the night. The next day, Smith drove to the home of his girlfriend, whom he had been arguing with the previous night. Smith's girlfriend contacted the local police, who responded and met with Smith. The responding officers observed Smith showing signs of impairment and had Smith submit to a portable breath test. The result of the portable breath test was a 0.156 breath alcohol content. Smith was not arrested. Instead, he was transported by officers to a friend's home. On January 8, 2013, Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office Internal Affairs conducted a Garrity interview with Smith. Smith admitted to driving while impaired on December 25th and December 26, 2012. As well as driving with open alcohol containers, Smith was terminated from the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office on May 15th, 2013. On February 20th, 2014, Smith was arrested for driving under the influence in Michigan. Smith submitted to a breath test, which indicated he had a breath alcohol content of 0.240. On March 17th, 2014, Smith pled guilty in a Michigan court to an amended charge of driving while impaired. On May 29th, 2014, Post conducted a Garrity interview with Smith over the phone. Smith admitted to driving with open alcohol containers on December 25th and December 26, 2012, as well as driving while impaired. Smith also admitted that he had been arrested in Michigan for DUI in December and February 2014 and had been too intoxicated to drive on that occasion as well. Michael Smith failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and on July 7, 2015, an order of default was signed by the ALJ and mailed to Smith.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, or representative here? I see no one. Any further questions for counsel before we bring it back for a vote? All right, I'll entertain a motion. We have a 2.5 year suspension recommended by Post.
Okay, a motion to approve by Chief Stratton. Is there a second? Second. John Crowley. All right. I have a motion and a second. 2.5 year suspension. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion passed. Next case.
The final matter before the council is the certification of Lana J. Willis. She is a current member of the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. Sustained allegation is disorderly conduct, which falls under Category F of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action on this matter is a letter of caution. A summary of the facts are as follows. On January 23, 2014, Officer Lana Willis was admitted to a local hospital after a suicide attempt involving the ingestion of prescription drugs, which had been prescribed to her. Willis was involuntarily committed by doctors for a mental health evaluation. Willis became upset when she was informed that she would have to be transported to another facility by ambulance. Hospital security was called to assist in the matter, and a verbal exchange commenced between Willis's family and hospital security. An on-duty uniformed police officer was summoned by hospital security to assist with this situation. While the officer was speaking with Willis's mother, Willis interrupted and began speaking over the officer. The officer asked Willis to stop, but Willis refused. Willis then walked towards the uniformed officer and bumped into him. Willis was held back by hospital security and struggled to free herself. Willis was then taken to the ground, placed in handcuffs, and transported to another medical facility. The officer filed charges, and Willis later pled guilty to disorderly conduct, an infraction. Willis's plea was held in abeyance until court fees were paid. In Garrity interviews, Willis claimed that she was not in her right mind and said her decisions on that day of the incident were not rational. On August 26, 2015, Willis waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right, thank you. Is Ms. Willis here or representative? All right, I see no one rising. I'll bring this back to the council unless there are further questions or motion. Okay, I have a motion to accept. A letter of caution. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, motion passes.
There you go.
Thank you. All right, next is the date for our next meeting.
Okay. Typically, we do the first or second week of December, but I'm wondering if we can push it back up into January for the next year, maybe the first week. I have an unusually busy December, so if council would be willing to entertain that, that'd be awesome. But I would hate to miss a meeting. I'm seeing you guys. So I'll throw out a date. Is everybody okay with January? What about, some people had conflict on some other days during the week, but Monday seems to be the best day. What about the 4th? That is probably the first day back for most of us. Is that okay?
have time to warm up to the new year and come in. Okay.
Let's see, it'll be
January 4th, 10 o'clock here, unless somebody would like to host the meeting. Okay, well,
two times. I'm here. All right. January 4th at 10 o'clock at post. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Any further discussion on anything? If not, I'll make a motion to adjourn. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.